This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony. Glad to be here and glad to be getting your weekend off to a start. Well, as usual, today on Washington Watch, some pretty interesting topics. We're going to, in our first segment, we're going to talk about the whirling, swirling, three-ring circus that is Washington, D.C. You know, it gets tiring. It kind of wears me out when I try to keep up with everything that's happening there. But we're going to have John Hayward on here in just a minute. He's the Breitbart News senior editor to talk about a couple of the stories, in particular this one about Devin Nunes, who is the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, and all the flack that he received from actually going and trying to get some information from one of the sources that was important to the investigation. And whatever other time we'll have, we'll delve into other topics going on in Washington that, eventually will impact us. Segment two, we're going to be talking with Marianne Mendoza. She's the mom of Sergeant Brandon Mendoza, police officer who was killed by an illegal alien, a drunk driving illegal alien. And we want to talk with her and maybe get her sense from kind of that firsthand perspective about the controversy surrounding sanctuary cities. You know, that's a big deal right now, and they're talking about it. And we've got mayors of major cities who are refusing to comply with what they're supposed to comply with and cooperate with ICE and the government in terms of getting some of these bad actors out of the country. Seems to make sense to most normal thinking people. Final segment's pretty exciting. We have an exciting guest today. Most of you probably have heard of Dr. James Dobson. And he has consented to being on the program with us today. What we're going to talk about is all this falderal that the left is throwing out regarding an interview with Vice President Pence's wife, Karen, where she talked about some of the boundaries that that they set to protect their marriage. And the left has just gone loony nutso about this, about something that most people think is pretty standard operating procedure to preserve your marriage, prevent adultery, kind of keep things where they ought to be. Just some boundaries that actually people like Billy Graham set many, many years ago. You know, Mr. Graham's got a pretty sterling reputation, and part of it is because some of the boundaries and rules that he set for himself so that he could not even be accused of doing anything that was halfway wrong. Well, as I said, much is happening in the nation's capital. Things are abuzz about Congressman Devin Nunes, who chairs the House Intelligence Committee. The California Republican is under fire for allegedly briefing President Trump before talking with other members of the Intel panel. And we'll get into that and a couple of other topics here. With us now is John Hayward, Breitbart News senior editor. John, this is a complicated, muddy story. Help us understand what's going on, and welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's really actually at least three stories running in parallel, side by side with each other. The original one, the oldest one, is the complaint about potential improper contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. We know that's been a controversy for some time now. The second one is the complaint that President Trump leveled that he had been spied upon by the Obama administration and that the information had been used improperly for political purposes against him. And then the third one, which we just picked up a couple of weeks ago, is Devin Nunes and his investigation and the allegations that he's done something improper in the course of conducting this investigation, that he's either exposed information he shouldn't have or that he was fed information by the White House and he hasn't been honest about where he got it from. And as you pointed out, the Democrats on the House committee, on the House Intelligence Committee, are angry that he briefed the president without briefing them, and they think they were out of the loop. So there's a lot of controversy about that. There's really three stories that are piled into each other, and it's hard to pick one development out from the next because with three stories, the developments come pretty fast. Every couple of hours, it seems like something else breaks out.
Well, let's take the Nunes piece first. Just help us sort out what's the latest information on that. You know, why? Now, he apparently did go to the White House to get some information and to talk to a source or sources about information on this investigation that his committee is doing. So first of all, fill us in on what happened there. And then, you know, is this out of sorts? Is this inappropriate, the thing that he did?
Well, that is the complaint, that he went to the White House, that someone gave him this information, that it was improper in some way for him to go to the White House to view this information in a secure compartmented facility, what's called the SCIF, where they look at classified intelligence materials, and that somehow there was something untoward about the way he was brought in there. But I think it was today or yesterday, one of his predecessors, Pete Hoekstra, who used to be the head of the House Intelligence Committee, he was giving an interview, and he said, no, there's nothing really unusual or improper about that at all, that's being blown out of proportion as a scandal, because that was appropriate, that he did that in order to see this information. And apparently we found something, because this afternoon, I think within the last hour or so, Fox News had a big report they ran that said they found the person that has unmasked the information about the Trump campaign, and it seems highly likely that person is going to be in big trouble. That really was wrong, and they might even face legal jeopardy for doing this, and they apparently now know who it is. It's supposedly someone very high up in the intelligence community, and they said it is not someone with the FBI, but other than that, their identity is still mysterious.
Now, let me explain. My understanding of this whole unmasking thing has nothing to do with Halloween, and then correct me where I'm wrong, but it's a situation where if one of our intelligence organizations is doing surveillance, let's say they're and you can use the old-fashioned term of phone tapping, if you will, or wiretapping, but these days with the various technologies that are available, there are many ways to go about doing that. But essentially, my understanding is what this means is that, let's say, for instance, that Mike Flynn, who was the first national security advisor who was asked to resign, not necessarily for the conversations he was purported to have had, but for not being straightforward with the vice president. But so his conversations with the Russians, which allegedly is what took place, we kind of look into those sorts of conversations and communications frequently. The issue is, my understanding is that his identity is supposed to be masked or covered, and when that information, once the other side of the conversation is made available, it is not, you're not supposed to know who he was talking to, or that he was the one talking to, say a Russian ambassador. Do I have it about right?
Yes, that's basically it. When that kind of intelligence is gathered, it's supposed to be protected very carefully, and among the protections is that the people involved are concealed. It just says U.S. person number one or something like that in the transcript, and you're not supposed to say who it was. And there are some pretty strict requirements about disposing of and destroying that kind of intelligence. It's definitely not supposed to be disseminated, but one of the things that critics of the Obama administration have been pointing out is that right before his term of office was completed, President Obama changed the rules for how this information would be distributed to the government and allowed it to be spread much wider across the administration. It was not restricted to as many carefully controlled intelligence groups as it used to be, and that made it much easier to leak. Once everybody had it, it was easier for people to get hold of their favorite media guy and leak whatever they had. And the people that have called foul on President Obama have said that's why he did it. They did that in order to set up this leak machine that's still running to this very day and bedeviling the Trump administration.
Now, so you've got several things going on there. Number one, you just said it's illegal to leak the information, correct?
Yes. Yep. And especially if this is classified intelligence. Very illegal.
And now, did not the Obama administration make some adjustments in terms of what was to be considered classified and what was not?
Yes, there's some pretty arcane rules that cover that, but it is the purview of the president to address those rules. So that is possible. And President Trump could do that. Any president could do that. And the accusation is that it was done for political purposes. And that's the sort of the parallel story running here, that even as the revelations that were leaked to the media are making trouble for the Trump administration, he's been complaining about the wiretapping, as he put it, but the way the information is collected and the way it was distributed, and it seems like there's more and more to that story. With every few passing days, we find out more. And if this most recent report is true, and they've actually isolated the person who did the leaking, we could have a pretty major story brewing there. That's something that is horribly wrong, no matter what was actually in the information, but because it's a very politically polarized story, people on one side only want to have the latest dirt on the Trump-Russia thing, and then people on the other side say that only the manner in which it is being collected and leaked is really important, and the Democrats are objecting and saying, no, we need to investigate all of it, and it's quite a political fight. I mean, there are fists flying everywhere in Capitol Hill over this.
Boy, absolutely. And so one violation then is obviously releasing classified material. The other violation is the unmasking. So if they actually have somebody have a name in the intelligence community, this could get real interesting. Well, you know, you'd mentioned one of the other of the three different stories that we're talking about was that President Trump, and this has been, what, several weeks ago, said that he was wiretapped, and everybody laughed at him. Now, what? There's some evidence now that that may, in one way or another, have been the case. What evidence do you have of that?
Well, one of the things that got everybody's attention a couple of days ago was the appearance of a woman named Evelyn Farkas, who used to work for the Obama administration, and she gave an interview where she pretty explicitly said that they were wiretapping Trump. I mean, not in quite those words, but she said they had surveillance and they had information, and the administration was talking about what to do with it and how they were going to save it to make sure it was preserved and so on, and it raised eyebrows, to put it mildly. There were people watching that conversation that thought she was unwittingly displaying the smoking gun that, you know, would bring down the whole Obama team for doing this, and she didn't seem to realize the gravity of what she was saying. Now, in the time since that happened, some people have pointed out that she had formally left the administration long before the end of President Obama's term, and she wasn't really in a position to be directly involved with the kind of thing she was talking about, and I think she herself has said she was going by media reports. She essentially said, I didn't really know anything inside, you know, I didn't have any smoking guns. I'm just saying that based on the media reports, that's what I think was going on, in essence. And that's pretty much what President Trump said when he made the comment about wiretapping. He put out a tweet that started this whole storyline. So I think, again, you circle back around to the idea that there was so much breathless, inaccurate, sloppy reporting manipulated by these Obama people, by the leaks they were putting out to create this storyline of President Trump being involved with the Russians. And boy, the cops were right on his heels. The FBI, the CIA, everybody, they had him dead to rights. The NSA, they were wiretapping him. And when President Trump finally spoke up and said, hey, if this reporting is all true, you can't do that. That's illegal. You couldn't have done that to me. And he complained about it. All of a sudden, the tenor of the reporting changed overnight, and they stopped running all these breathless reports and making these wild accusations and assertions, and suddenly everybody was more careful about their language. So I think we're still at that stage in the story where we're getting to the bottom of exactly what information was gathered and if any of it was shared improperly.
Well, let's hope so. And you know, these days, it's really hard to know where to turn in terms of a news source or a news organization to find anything that's accurate. Now, you're probably a little bit biased, but I would assume that it is the goal of the Breitbart organization to get the story right, is it not?
Sure, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, everybody has a standpoint. I think some organizations are more honest about their viewpoint than others, and some of them will tell you where they're coming from and some of them won't. What bothers me about the reporting that I've consumed from other sources about all this is how many of them are being obviously manipulated by these leaks in a way I've never really seen before. Leaking's been going on forever, and then everybody's been doing it and using it to shape media coverage for my life and your life and before that. But this is like nothing I think I've ever seen. It's like the difference between a tornado or a hurricane and a rainstorm in the way that these leaks are being used to manipulate and shape coverage, and so much of the leaked information is run without any editorial review at all. Something that's leaked to a paper, and they just run it. They don't even try to find out if it's true or not. It came from an Obama person. It's still in the government. There's a lot of them still there, and they can apparently just pick up the phone and get coverage running whenever they want to. And
yeah, very, really, it's not right. Journalism. It's very, very irresponsible. Well, John, we're out of time here. John Hayward, Breitbart News Senior Editor, thanks for taking time and getting us caught up at least on a couple of these stories. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, coming up next, should sanctuary cities be withheld federal funds if they don't follow the law and don't comply with federal authorities? We'll talk about that in our next segment on Washington Watch.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
Yes, my name is Tina, and I am from America, Kansas. And the last 3 years, the Lord has just really been moving in my life. But what I wanted to say is, you guys are just really on the ball. You're changing up the ministry in such good ways, and it's just wonderful. It's so profound to me. I downloaded the app because I wanted to listen to AFR Talk. We only get the music station here. So I listen on the app all the time. And I wanted to say, too, that Abraham Hamilton, having him on board is just awesome. You guys are just adding so much to the ministry. I just appreciate it so much. And so I just thank you so much for your ministry. And I'm always praying for you guys. And thank you so much for AFR.
Your partnership with American Family Radio keeps your family informed on the issues of the day. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon beginning April 4th.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net, and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony Perkins. Tony's Twitter handle at T Perkins. Also, frc.org is the website. My Twitter handle is at Evan Fowler. That's EbenFowler. Well, glad to have you listening today. Before we get into the next segment, I just want to let you know, I want to sort of promote, if you would, tease the segment coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have Dr. James Dobson on as our guest, and he's going to be talking about, we're going to be asking him about the guidelines that Vice President Pence and his wife Karen has set up as a way of protecting and putting guardrails around their marriage. So you won't want to miss that. Be with us here at the bottom of the hour. Well, the city of Seattle is suing the Trump administration over threats to withhold federal money from sanctuary cities. On the line with us now is Mary Ann Mendoza. She's the mother of Sergeant Brandon Mendoza, who was killed in 2014 in a violent head-on collision. He was killed by a three times the legal limit drunk and high on meth illegal alien. She supports President Trump's move to protect our nation's cities and our citizens. Marianne, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
Well, first of all, tell us the story about your son. What happened?
He was coming home from work. He had just left work, and he was on a elevated HOV ramp, and he had no clue what was coming towards him from the other end, other side. And, was hit so violently. He was in surgery when I arrived at the hospital, and he succumbed to his injury shortly after that.
Now, he was a police officer, correct?
Yes, he was.
And with
and
what
he
department?
He was a very, very, very integral part of a community. He had just revitalized the South Side Park, gotten rid of drug dealers and homeless people, and the crime rate went way down, and children in the community. He went door-to-door and met everyone who lived in his beat. They would invite him in for dinner. I mean, he was just a community, kind of a modern-day beat cop that everybody loved.
That's right. So sounds like he was a great community police officer.
Yeah.
Well, then tell us a little bit about, obviously, this whole issue of sanctuary cities is in the news. People are talking about it. We have, we have our attorney general who is actually doing his job now and talking about things like enforcing the law for a change. What kind of involvement have you had in this particular issue? Have you had any conversations with the Trump administration? What's going on with that in your life?
We've talked many times throughout the campaign with Mr. Trump, a lot of us parents who have lost our children and loved ones, about the problem with Sanctuary City. So he was fully aware of how we felt about this type of thing, promised us that he was going to bring an end to it. And, you know, everyone that I've met who's lost a loved one at the hands of an illegal is fighting this fight to prevent any other family from having to deal with the devastation that each one of us have experienced. And that's where each of us find the strength to fight this fight every day. And it just sickens me when I see my fellow American mayors and governors doing anything and everything they can to protect illegal criminals and felons in their cities and states with complete disregard to their fellow Americans. And you know, it's their fellow Americans who have voted them into the positions that they're in. And, you know, their number one job is, you know, to uphold the law and protect the citizens of their cities and states. So I'm at a loss for words when it comes to their mindset and how they can possibly think this way.
Well, I was going to ask you, and maybe you've already answered the question with both what you just said, but why is it that they want to protect these folks who are, well, first of all, the fact that they are in the country illegally, they've already committed one crime, but then they go on to do things like this and, you know, commit irresponsible acts that end up in the death of people like your son. I mean, have you been able to figure out any reason why, other than maybe some ideological or political reason?
I think the number one reason is politics and greed. But, you know, the arguments that we hear all the time, you know, when we speak out on this issue is that illegals commit less crime than Americans do. Well, you know, you're looking at things in a completely skewed manner, because if you take the amount of crime that an illegal commits and apply that towards the total illegal population in the United States, you now have a true percentage of how many of them are committing crime. You cannot take the total amount of illegals who commit a crime and compare it to the whole population of the United States, because we're talking about illegal aliens in our country. The second thing is these mayors and these governors talk about the immigrants make our community safer. Listen, they have got to stop comparing immigrants to illegal aliens and illegal criminals in our community. Our legal immigrant communities are, you know, getting pretty upset about being tangled into that whole thing. And those are the exact words that these mayors and governors use in order to confuse the average American who really isn't paying attention to what's happening. And like parents, like I am, you know, because of the fight we've been thrown into. And I was just hearing the Seattle mayor speaking about, you know, it's already affecting the members of their community. They're afraid to come forward when there's cases of domestic violence. Okay, so out of one side of his mouth, he's saying they make our community safer. On the other side of his mouth, he's saying this is making them afraid to come forward and report domestic violence. If you've got a lot of domestic violence going on in your community, that this is making you have this huge statement to make, why do you want these domestic violence perps roaming your streets and having the citizens of your cities less safe? They talk out of both sides of their mouth, and they don't make any sense. And, you know, and also he said, you're going to take away the federal funding that we need for our police department to keep our community safe. Well, you're saying your communities are safe because these immigrants are in it. So why do you need the federal funding for your, you know? It just is a circle they speak in.
It is. And, you know, Marianne, you're way too logical, of course. and those folks just aren't logical at all. Well, first of all, we're sorry for your loss. Though it's been 3 years, I'm sure the pain is still there. We appreciate you so much for coming on Washington Watch today, Marianne.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Well, coming up next, can you believe this? Vice President Pence is under fire for wanting to protect his marriage. Not dining alone with a woman other than his wife. That's one of the rules that he and his wife have set. Well, Dr. James Dobson will join us next, and you won't want to miss it. We'll also have an opportunity for you to call in, hopefully, and talk with Dr. Dobson. And what we want you to do is maybe tell us some of the things that you do to protect your marriage. We'll have that phone number for you, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Many people ask me about avoiding taxes on their IRAs. Some leave it in their estates and want to leave it to their children or leave it to other heirs, and they don't want to see all that tax get a hit on it. Well, it's virtually impossible to avoid with an IRA. You can't put IRA money into trust and other things that may shelter some of the tax. But here's a great idea that you ought to think about. I would hope that all of you are givers, that you give to some of the great ministries, to the work of God, to your church on a regular basis. And maybe you have all your life. I hope you have. And if you have, I would assume that you are making provisions in your will for that final last gift to God's work. Maybe you want to give 10% to four different ministries. You want to give some to obviously your church. You want to give maybe something to a ministry like this, Financial Issues or Family Research Council or American Family Association. And you want to do that as your last part of giving. Best way you could possibly do that is through your IRA. You could name those ministries for a percentage that would equal 10% of your overall estate, and you can name them as beneficiaries on your IRA. And all of that money will go without any taxes being paid on it. It is the best way to avoid taxes. I hope you'll think about that as you think about making that final gift. Do it through the beneficiary form of your IRA to some of those great ministries.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Glad to have you along listening. Well, in recent days, the left has become unhinged after learning that Vice President Mike Pence has a rule. He doesn't dine with another woman alone if his wife isn't present. Well, instead of praising this man for honoring God, his marriage, and his children, the left is flipping out, and they're attacking him. And we're going to have Dr. James Dobson on the line here in just a few minutes. But I want to start out by reading some excerpts from a couple of articles that were written here. Well, actually, one today from National Review that just a couple of interesting comments about this whole story. So bear with me here as I kind of jump around in this article. This is by Jonah Goldberg from today's National Review. He says, the Washington Post, that's where this all started, ran a profile of Vice President Mike Pence's wife, Karen, and lots of people are outraged or repulsed that the two evangelical Christians do things that are fairly normal for evangelical Christians to do. Specifically, Mike Pence apparently doesn't dine alone with women or other than his wife, or attend events where alcohol is served if his wife doesn't accompany him. Perhaps this practice started when he was in Congress, a place where many a politician has ruined his marriage and career by not following such rules. In response, there's been a lot of cheap mockery from prominent liberal writers and activists. It's a very strange place we found ourselves in when elites say that we have no right to judge adultery, but we have every right to judge couples who take steps to avoid it. And that's what we're going to be talking about here in this segment and the last segment. With us now is someone who knows a lot about marriage and family and relationships, and that's Dr. James Dobson, the founder and president of Family Talk and the author of more than 30 books dedicated to the preservation of the family. Dr. Dobson, it is so good to have you on Washington Watch.
Evan, thank you for making the call. I really appreciate the opportunity to address this because, frankly, I'm outraged by this criticism of Mike Pence. It's breathtaking that they would have such gall to tell a man that he can't relate to his wife any way he wants to without criticism from some cheap hack out there who's trying to take a shot at him.
Yeah, it's absolutely breathtaking. I want to read, Dr. Dobson, from an article that was written today by Matt Walsh, or yesterday, actually, about this. It's and this is kind of toward the end of his article on it. I'd like you to comment on what he says. And this is really from his perspective. He kind of concludes this article by saying, "Personally, I have no desire to go out with women other than my wife. I have no desire to maintain friendships with women. My wife and I agreed from the outset that we would not have friends of the opposite sex unless the friends are mutual. And even in that case, we would always hang out with that person together. There are many aspects of marriage that may be challenging or require effort, but for me, this isn't one of them. Frankly, when I have some time to myself, I much prefer to either spend it alone, reading or fishing or something, or with male friends who I share a fraternal bond with. A man can't have that kind of bond with a woman. It's an absurd proposition." Then it jumps down to the last paragraph. "This all to me seems obvious. It's obvious to Mike Pence and Karen Pence. It's obvious to many married people. But as we've established, there's nothing that makes people more upset these days than the obvious." So your thoughts about that. And then, by the way, Dr. Dobson, we're going to hold you over, if we can, into the final segment and perhaps take some listener calls where folks will have an opportunity to interact with us. So, first of all, talk about this rule that the vice president and his wife have set. Why is that important?
Well, I have known Mike Pence for 25 years. He's a godly man. He's a good man. He's a good family man and a good husband and father. And I have watched him as a congressman for years. He lives by the highest standards of ethics. And what I said before is, who has a right to criticism a Christian man for living by these standards of propriety? I don't know if have you ever heard of the Modesto Manifesto?
I have not.
Many, many years ago, Billy Graham and five of his men were in the city of Modesto, and they got together in a hotel room, and they made a pledge to each other that they would live by this very standard, that they would never be with a woman in a room alone. They would never eat with a woman alone. They would never take a plane trip with a woman alone. And they would protect their marriages. And five of them plus Billy Graham, not a one of them has had a marriage that failed, because they protected it, because they believed in honoring the marital relationship. And it's a great idea. I wish every man would do it. You may remember that some years ago, Jerry Jenkins wrote a book called Hedges. And it's a wonderful book. I don't even know if it's still in print. But he talked about building a hedge of protection around your relationship, because
absolutely,
the culture will take you to hell. It
That's
will
right.
destroy your marriage if it can get a handle on it. And when you're in an office and you're with your secretary and she's attractive and she hands you a paper and you let your hand slide over her hand as you pick it, it's a flirtation. It was not infidelity. It was not a violation of a marital pact. But you don't do that if you want to protect your marriage.
Dr. Dobson, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more.
The love of one's country, that's what patriotism is, according to Noah Webster, you know, the dictionary guy. Well, we're going to be being patriots when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in September. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. September 20th through the 24th, we're going to be seeing our nation's capital. We've taken thousands of people over the years to do this, and people sometimes come back for a second and third time. We're going to be seeing our nation's capital from a distinctively Christian perspective with historian Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation. Now, we're also going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to do that trip. That's September 17th through the 20th. So those are two separate trips. You can do one or you can do both. We'd love to have you and your family. For more information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com. Space is filling up. Hope to see you in September.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
American Family Association began in 1977 as the National Federation for Decency. Founded by Don Wildman, our mission is to inform, equip, and activate people like you to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and give aid to the church. American Family Association is one of the largest and most effective pro-family organizations in the country, and it's because of God's blessings and the generosity of people like you.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
My name is John Huber, and I can't even explain what exploring the Word has meant to me. It's a constant on my drive back home from work every day in a time when it's so easy to not spend time in the Word. That is my constant. That is my time in the Word with Alex's intellect and Bert's charming wisdom. I gotta tell you, it's just a special time. It's time with the Word, but even more importantly, what sticks out in my mind is when someone calls and has a need, the compassion and the love in their voice, and when they stop and pray for folks, it means the world to me, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us during our 3-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. American Family Radio, boldly standing for truth for your family.
Listening to the Friday edition of Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in this afternoon for Tony Perkins and our wonderful guest, Dr. James Dobson, on the line with us. Let me give you the phone number. We're going to try to get a few calls in here if we can. It's 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I'd like to hear your thoughts about this topic. And also, from our married listeners, what are some of the things that you have done that have worked well in terms of keeping boundaries in your marriage, if you'd like to share those? Well, Dr. Dobson, again, thank you for being with us this afternoon. You know, you mentioned the Modesto Manifesto. I had not heard it by that name, but I did hear certainly about the rules that Billy Graham set. Go ahead and continue on that in that vein and why that works so well for Billy Graham and why it should work for the Pences and the rest of us.
Evan, I'm sorry I got carried away. I didn't know your segment was so short, and so I ran past the end point.
But live radio.
I don't know where you left me and whether I finished that Modesto manifesto that Billy Graham and his team worked out.
Yeah, you had said
that. Is that, yeah, none of those five families ever broke up, including Billy Graham, number six. They preserved their marriages. They protected it by doing just the kind of thing that Mike Pence has done now and been criticized for.
You know, and it's some of the comments that have come from, I guess we'll just say from the left, from people who really probably don't know a whole lot about marriage, or at least don't understand, you know, the biblical aspects of marriage and how to preserve marriage. But, you know, they have said some really some things that are certainly not repeatable on live radio. But, you know, they, for one thing, I'd like you to address this. Some on the left say that these kinds of beliefs and these practices somehow keep women from power. Address that one.
Ask a woman how she feels about it. Ask a woman who loves her husband and is trying to live a godly life as a wife and mother. Ask a woman who has children if she wants her husband to honor her in this way. It's the silly little reporters that are looking for something to criticize. I bet you a dollar they're leftists in their perspective. And they're just looking for something to criticize. And this is not coming from women. It's coming from these reporters that are looking for something negative to say.
And here's one more. I'll throw this one out. Some say this is sexist, and women worry that if they don't have lunch with the male boss, they may miss out on promotions. Is that a valid point, or how would you counsel a young woman to deal with something like that?
Are promotions more valuable than a lifetime together in a committed, loving marriage? I mean, how silly is that? I mean, it just takes my breath away. When I read this yesterday, I thought, I've seen some crazy things, but this has got to be one of the stupidest that I've heard. For Mike Pence to say he will not have dinner with a woman when his wife is not there, that's a good thing, man. That's not a negative. That's not hurting women. Certainly not hurting another woman. If you want to interview a woman and give her more exposure, bring your wife with you, or invite her to dinner with the two of you. It's just very common sense. And before we went away, I don't think you heard me say this, but flirtation in an office is a dangerous thing. And I talked about Jerry Jenkins in his book Hedges, where he talked about the importance of building a wall, a hedge around your marriage. You do that, and you're likely to last a lifetime.
Yeah, it's very simple. And, you know, to the point of the woman who's concerned about not being able to have lunch with a male boss with the potential of a promotion, well, get a third party in there. Get somebody else. Get another colleague. The male boss should, if he's doing the right thing, have another colleague there.
Exactly. And that's not hard to do. Bring another man, or bring a woman. Bring one of your colleagues, your female colleagues, that can sit and help you talk through whatever it is you're talking about. It's not likely to stray over into flirtatious kind of stuff if you've got another set of ears there.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Dobson, would you like to maybe talk to a couple of our listeners and take a couple of calls with me?
I'd love it. Evan, let's do that.
All right. We've got Linda on the line from Indiana. Linda, welcome to Washington Watch, and like you to meet Dr. James Dobson.
Thank you so much. And hello, Dr. Dobson. I'm so pleased
hello,
to talk with you. I listen to Washington Watch every evening. I had not really heard what the problem was with Pence. I could not imagine, knowing the kind of Christian man he is. And then when I heard on your program tonight what it was, I could not believe that people are that shallow, that they would criticize him. My husband and I will have our 60th wedding anniversary in July of this year, and we are Christians, and we have always trusted in each other. But for somebody to think this is wrong, that he feels that way, I cannot believe.
Well, thank you for calling.
Well,
thank you for calling, Dr. Dobson.
We're coming up on our 57th, so congratulations to you, and you're doing the right thing. And I mean, this is a godly principle. This is the Lord would have us do this. I believe this comes out of Scripture. And for Mike Pence to not only do it, but to have the courage to tell the rest of us about it, I just admire him so greatly because he's such a good man.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for calling. And, you know, for some people, Dr. Dobson, this is a brand new idea. And, you know, hopefully there'll be some folks who say, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to start doing that. Let me put the phone number out again. It's 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234. Talking with Dr. James Dobson here on Washington Watch. Tracy is on the line from Texas. Tracy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Hello. And finally get to actually talk to Dr. Dobson for the first time ever. I just wanted to say that I'm from the younger generation. I'm in my 40s, but I had a great role model as parents. as parents, godly parents too, and seeing their marriage. And you said it earlier when you said that they really don't even know what marriage is about. And I think that Mike Pence's wife should take her husband and make a statement publicly with him by her side and defend him, you know, and because he did the right thing. Yeah. If my husband had done that, you know, my marriage didn't work out for other reasons, but my husband and I had that kind of way too. And it's about protecting yourselves first.
Absolutely.
I mentioned in the first segment that I've known the Pences for 35 years, and they really do love each other. And they're great parents. They're great moms and dads. Why would anybody criticize that? If you're going to criticize something, criticize the office flirt or the guy who's always trying to make it with a woman. I mean, those are the people that deserve our criticism. And certainly our disrespect, because marriage is in trouble today. And if we're going to preserve it, we got to put some effort into it and give it priority. I tell you one last thing. My own organization will not allow a man and woman to travel alone on a plane together or stay in a hotel together. We build those hedges around marriage, and I don't want to do anything to hurt the marriages of those who work for me.
Absolutely. You know, and it would be helpful if, as your organization has done, if other organizations would have some of those guardrails, those guidelines in place. It makes it easier because everybody knows what the expectation is, as is the case with your organization, Dr. Dobson. Deborah is on the line from Arkansas. Deborah, thanks for calling today.
Thank you for letting me. I appreciate the time. Can I give you my little story?
Absolutely.
I wish they had this back in the 70s, because my husband was the youth leader in the church. We lived across the street from the preacher's daughter and her husband, and we did everything together. We always went camping and everything. But on Saturday, my husband and the preacher's daughter would go and do extra work, evangelistic work. Well, about 2 years later, we got divorced, and guess what? The youth leader married the preacher's daughter.
Well, there you go.
Oh, boy. Well, it's the easiest thing in the world to happen. We're made with this powerful attraction to each other as men and women. And when a man is attracted to a woman, and she is receptive to him, his marriage is in great jeopardy, and we just can't let that happen. Because I'm telling you, having been married as long as I have, there is nothing more precious to me than my relationship with my wife, Shirley. And I wouldn't do anything to hurt her. But it started very early. This is not a new thought for me. We were married in 1960, and we've lived by this standard. And I think it honors God and your spouse.
Absolutely. And Rob is on the line from Arkansas. Rob, apparently you and your wife follow this policy. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Dr. Dobson, I think it was 20 years ago when I heard you on the radio talking about this policy, and I adopted it as my own. And I'm taking a lot of heat, you know, people laughing at me and things over it. But, you know, we're coming up on our 20th anniversary, and we're doing just fine.
You going to go the distance?
Oh, yeah. You kidding?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, and, Rob, you said that people kind of made fun of you. How did you handle that?
Well, I just told them. I said there's no point in inviting trouble into your marriage. You know, there's not that I'm going to be unfaithful, and not that she's going to, but if we're never alone, if you're never alone with a woman, nobody can even suggest that there's something going on. If somebody brought it
you
up...
You know, you're only half the relationship. You may be able to deal with the more intimate moments at dinner or what have you with a woman who's not your wife, but how does she feel about it? Yeah, you know, it's very possible for her to have feelings that you don't feel responsible for. But you are. You really have. For a marriage to work, everybody has to make a priority out of it. And, you know, I would, in closing, I would have a suggestion to the little smart mouth reporter who wrote this criticism. Mind your own business. It's none of your business what I do in my marriage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Susan is on the line from Tennessee. Susan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Well, I just called to say that I am a woman that did the opposite. I had the lunch, and I'm divorced today, and I wish I would have held on to Billy Graham's policies.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a sad story. And did it come out of casual relationships?
Yes. And I, you know, it was just someone that kept coming by my desk and visiting, and I kept resisting and resisting, and eventually I just gave in. Oh, it's just lunch. It's no big deal. But it did end up into an adulterous affair, and it ended, my divorce ended. I mean, my marriage ended in a divorce.
Well, it's happened to millions and millions of people, and often it happens in the early years before people have settled into their own marriages, and then they get into these casual situations, and it never stays the same. Relationships always move, and it's usually toward more and more intimate circumstances. And before you know it, you've hurt your spouse, you've hurt yourself, but you've also hurt your children, and that's what concerns me.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for calling and sharing that difficulty in your life. We appreciate you calling in and helping our listeners to understand Dr. Dobson, the importance of setting those kinds of boundaries. Let's take one more call, and just so everybody knows, we've got just about 2 minutes here, and I've got Gary on the line from Oklahoma. Gary, just have about a minute, if you could just tell us your thoughts, and welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you taking my call, and I'll try to make it fast. One thing I do is each day in my prayer, I thank God for my wife, and I know that He gave her to me. And when I tell people about my wife, I always tell them that she's my spiritual rib. And the reason why I think God took the rib to make woman is because it guards the inner parts of man. And I think a man's wife should know private things about her husband that no one else should know, and she should be there to encourage him and help him through life, and we should never take each other for granted. And I want to mention one thing for young people that's getting married is to be praying about it, and always make sure that you have God involved in it, and then write down 3 to 5 things why you love that person, and have them put on the same card and laminate it so you can say, why I love her, and then have those listed and flip it over and it says, why I love them. And keep them in your Bible, and then you read them each day and think about why you fell in love with that person.
Gary, that's great advice. Thanks so much. Dr. Dobson, we are so appreciative that you took all this time today with us, and it's just been a great time to learn about how to strengthen our marriages. So thank you so much.
Evan, I enjoyed the conversation. It's such an important topic. Thanks for giving me a call.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all for listening to Washington Watch today. We'll talk to you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.